Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum. On today's show, we have Pete Simon. He's the founder of Kuleana.work and the Kuleana AI Lab over on Kauai. And hey, Pete, I want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Bert, thanks so much for the gracious invitation. I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, before the pandemic, you know, we try to get people to come into the studio. But then that's somewhat limiting, right? Because I would love to have you come on, you know, come into the studio, but, you know, it kind of involves a plane trip. So, you know, going via the phone makes it a much easier way of connecting with all the things happening, not only on the neighbor islands, but, you know, on the continent and even elsewhere. So I think it offers me the opportunity to touch base with a lot more folks that are doing interesting stuff. And, you know, I definitely wanted to get a chance to chat with you a little bit more about what you're doing over at Kuleana.work. But before we get into that, I want to give people a little taste of what is Pete Simon about. and you know, just to recollect, right? You were one of the recognized folks that got a Digital Equity Innovation Award last year. So I want to congratulate you for that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
But tell me a little bit about Pete Simon and what's your sort of history getting into sort of the tech scene there, and then, you know, and then eventually how did you kind of find your path into this co-working arena?
Sure. So I first came to the islands back in 94. I followed a girl out here, mm-hmm. that I was in love with, and she was a teacher. And we spent a year here, and that was enough to teach, coming from the upper Midwest, Chicago area. And that was enough to teach us a few things, that it was an amazing place and a place that I wanted to get back to. But as a teacher, and I was a substitute myself back, mm-hmm. then, we needed to refactor the finances. And so then it took a number of years of me coming back on my vacation and maintaining the friendships until I crossed over into tech. So, mm-hmm. I worked education and a bunch of other types of jobs before then, but eventually I got into tech, and then I started to get some real freedom as far as where I worked. And so anytime where it didn't matter where I lived, where I didn't have to go into the office, I would come back and work and live from Kauai, where I had made all my friends. And then finally in 2012, 2013, that's when I made the big move to, mm-hmm. move my lifestyle here full time. I made arrangements with the job that I had that I was going to be fully remote. And so that's how I sort of brought my tech job with me to the island. It was an interesting road getting into tech. Before I worked as a teacher, I worked as a detective. I worked for the casinos in the Midwest when they, uh-huh. opened, doing surveillance work and then teaching, being a surveillance instructor, teaching people how to cheat and how to catch cheaters. Just a real interesting path.
Wow. But
working for the casinos is kind of like working for the Empire in Star Wars, at least in my
yeah,
experience.
Right.
And it's not something that you want to do full time. So even though it was a really good job and I learned a lot, it was time to move on to something different. And I'd always loved technology, but in particular, it came to the way people could talk to each other across the web. When I was an undergrad way back in 1988 and 89, mm-hmm. I got my first computer and I was able to connect. I used America Online and CompuServe. And that's what really opened my eyes, right? Like that there was a whole world of people out there that I could talk to and understand. And I started to, you know, I knew that it was going to change the world. And so I always had that tucked in my back pocket. But, you know, the way I was raised, you know, get a regular job, don't go into computers, like be a cop or do this,
yeah,
other stuff. And so,
yeah.
I spent a bunch of time doing that. But when it finally came time to leave the casinos, I decided I'm going to get into technology. And I became a junior developer. And that was right at the end of the dot-com boom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right when all the silly, crazy, fun stuff stopped, at least for the first time. And so that's when I got into tech. But yeah, I started off as a developer. And then after a few years, I moved into a master's program in something called human-computer interaction, which is the study of how people and computers sort of get along, what humans need and the information that computers put out.
Mm-hmm.
And it really let me dig in. And that's kind of a design degree as well as a research degree. And so I became sort of a higher end designer and researcher that helped organizations be less awful online. So if they were making websites, and then right about that time, like mobile started to come up, people started getting phones and there were websites on phones.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a part of all that. And then the tablets came after that, and just helping companies navigate through that all the way up through today. My day job that I have right now is with a large healthcare company, and I help them be less awful online.
So, and that's a good objective to
yeah.
You know, reduce the awfulness, right, of corporations that need to interact with people. So over that course of your path into technology, I know you said you started as a developer. Have you stuck with that sort of expertise, or have you moved more into kind of the design and the human computer interface world?
I've definitely shifted over time. So I got to tell you, at the beginning, when I went through the program, the human computer interaction HCI program,
mm-hmm.
About, I don't know, one out of five of us at my school were from a developer background, and we really, really were, pieces of work. We understood how things work from a programming point of view, and most of the other people in the program did not. And so I had the advantage when I would, I learned the design and the research side, and that's the type of work that I did. So when I went into a team situation with whatever company I happened to be working with, I had the background. I knew what the developers were saying, and that put me so far ahead in my career that I could speak these other languages and be kind of a bridge builder
mm-hmm.
between these different groups. But eventually, as time went on, and not doing development's, a perishable skill. It's like,
oh yeah,
being a good camper or whatever, right? Like if you don't do it for a long time, it starts to get a little rusty. You still have your stories. You still have some awareness of it. But after some time, that skill set sort of fades. And so I could talk a little bit about it, and I can relive the glory days of when I was a developer. But I've definitely moved more into design and research. And now at the level that I'm working at, I work with strategy, helping companies understand emerging technologies like artificial intelligence or spatial computing, with the headsets, if you can look around and see stuff in 3D.
Right.
I help them make better decisions as far as that stuff goes.
Oh, that's really great. Now, I do want to give you a chance to talk about how you found this path into the co-working space, because it's called co-working arena. It's great to be a remote worker. It's great to have, a good client that, have a client that understands your value and takes advantage of it regardless of where you're at. That's great. That's great to have. But moving into the kind of like the co-working space, now that's a whole different set of skills in order to open up a business now that offers perhaps the same kind of environment that you would benefit from as a remote worker. So a little different focus on your part. So I do want to get you to share a little bit about that insight. We'll hold that thought.
Sure.
We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Pete Simon, founder of Kuliana.work and the Kuliana AI Lab. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Ulupono Initiative and Ruby Tuesday Hawaii.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Pete Simon, founder of Kuliana.work and the Kuliana AI Lab. And right before the break, we're talking about a little bit of Pete's background. And Pete, I can see where, as a remote worker and as you kind of evolve into the skill and value proposition that you bring to your client or clients, that's a really kind of unique job environment. But when you start to look at creating an environment where you can help others, let's say excel in a remote work environment, doing a co-working space is a little bit different from just working remotely. And mm-hmm. so you have to, and I've been to Kuliana.work, and I think it's a great space.
Thank you.
You have to, you know, have the kind of right environment. You have to have the right, let's say, creature comforts, you know, for people that want to work in a co-working space. How did you kind of get into that aspect of the business?
Sure. So first of all, of course, when everyone asks me and, you know, I put out myself as a founder, I'm a co-founder, right? So certainly I had help. Mm-hmm. And like even that phrase saying I had help, I feel like I helped it happen. Not that I had help. So the story is this. My current sweetheart, my fiance and I had just been traveling for a year all over the world, and we came back to Kauai, and this mm-hmm. is in 2017. And I found a place that I loved to work. I could walk right across the street. It was called Ha Coffee Shop, and it was on Rice Street. And this was way back in 2017 now, and it had been just opened by a guy named Jeff Adams.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff and I got along really well, and I would show up most days. I would tip really well. I would try and be quiet and stay out of the way, and I would do my work. And it was a regular, thriving kind of coffee shop. Jeff himself had come from Seattle, having been one of the pastors of a fairly large church in the Seattle area. And he decided that he was done with that and came to Kauai and opened up a coffee shop. So that's where we got to know each other and become friends. But mm-hmm. I was a regular, and, you know, we got to talking, becoming friends and all. And we would look around, and if there were 20 people in that coffee shop, 12 to 15 of them were on laptops.
Mm-hmm.
And I had taken my experience traveling, and where, you know, my fiance Kim and I had stayed in, you know, various places, but we always went to work writing a book that we were taking care of. We went to co-working spaces or cafes, and my experience with different co-working spaces all over the world taught me a couple things. One, like having that kind of third space where you can go and just chill out and relax, especially in the United States, is precious, right? Because those spaces weren't super common mm-hmm. back in the day. And then, so we started talking. We said, well, there's no co-working spaces on the island, because back then there weren't. And those conversations sort of rolled, and it became, you know, me sharing about what I thought about the model and on my end, really wanting, you know, a nice place to work that was even better than a coffee shop. It would be great if I had a place with couches and a place where I could make calls and not have, you know, the coffee shop in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff was pretty into the idea as well. So we got together a group of people who really, really saw that vision, and we all worked together to make it happen. We each had our own little specialty. You know, somebody had some money to spend, and another person was an expert in realty, and then we had several people who were amazing networkers
mm-hmm.
here on the island. And we just sort of brought it together. I didn't have any of those skills. I'm a pretty, you know, good guy to talk to, but I didn't bring any of that knowledge. So what I did was I helped build the community. I would organize, you know, some of the people working at the coffee shop, and every Friday we would go work from some other place on Kauai together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was just building the community before we had an actual building. And then the way that it worked out was the place right next to Jeff's coffee shop became available, and a very favorable situation emerged. And so we just put the first location of Kuleana.work right next to the coffee shop, and that's where we started. And it was something else. We just kind of went into it. Like, Jeff had never opened up a coffee shop before he did Ha, and I had never opened up any kind of physical business before. And so it was a learning experience for both of us. But as you go all over the world, or even just across the country and visit different co-working spaces, you realize that they're just like someone's living room, right? Like, every living room is different.
Mm-hmm.
Every kitchen is different in the house. And so co-working spaces, they all have a different feel, right? Some are really, really big. Kuleana.work is much more boutique, right? It's smaller, but it's kind of loungy, and we don't have a lot of bright lights on. It's really kind of a chill sort of atmosphere. And you've been there.
Yeah.
So it feels like, you know, if our sweet spot is the monthly member who's there for the long haul, who, you know, wants to come in and work every now and then, or, you know, work from home or not, whatever they want to do, but wants to see the same faces over time. We don't do day passes, and we don't have, you know, a number of conference rooms that we rent out. So we're kind of growing a small family that just happens to do these different works, right? One's an architect, the other owns a, you know, a taco business on the island, and so on and so forth. But it's really a nice, comfortable sort of environment. We just from the first location, grew the kind of place that we would want to work, mm-hmm. and put that in front of us.
Now, you said that when you opened up the first one, you're on Rice Street, now right next to Ha, the coffee shop. But you're now located in Kukui Grove, the shopping center. So, and of course, you had to endure the pandemic. So there's a whole pandemic between, you know, that time frame and now. So what sort of came about for that eventual move to Kukui Grove?
Oh, so there's a lot of chaos and a lot of stress and frustration during especially the early parts of lockdown, mm-hmm. right? And part of that, like, it just became obvious that we needed a different location. So Ha as a coffee shop had to change so drastically, especially during those first, say, 6 months of the pandemic, mm-hmm. from the model that it was at, right? And then the co-working space, we had to sort of figure out how we were going to do that too. And the space that we had just didn't work for us anymore, right? So we took the opportunity and after some conversations with Melissa McFerrin, who runs the properties over at the Kukui Grove Center, mm-hmm. It just seemed like a great place to go. And so we made our second home over there. So that's when we physically split off from mm-hmm. Ha Coffee. And it wasn't too long from then that Jeff and I, you know, had made the decision that the coffee was going to be one entity and the co-working space was going to be a different entity. Mm-hmm. Before that, it was pretty closely connected, but that's when we sort of went our own separate ways, and both of them grew after that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the mall has been really good to us. I can't say enough good things about how the Kukui Grove Center has been such a great host for our location. Now we're on our third location. We moved from that original place that we moved into there into a bigger, nicer space with more amenities.
What are the typical patrons that you have, you know, at Kuleana.work in its current configuration?
Sure. So I run down the list in my head, right? Architect, mm-hmm. Financial advisor, two business owners, two executive directors of nonprofits, a couple entrepreneurs. It's really people who self-starters who have the freedom to come and go, who want to work in a physical place, and who are fairly technologically savvy. I say we had that pretty much from the beginning. We seem to, for whatever reason, before unintentionally and now intentionally, draw people who were a little bit more technologically savvy. Mm-hmm. And then from that, we would start conversations, right? We would talk about digital literacy and the programs that we use to do, you know, our respective work, and talk about website design and things like that. So it just sort of, it accrued over time. But yeah, really, I would just say business owners or nonprofit workers looking for a really chill place to call home during the day when they decide they want to go into the office.
Do you find that the, you know, the co-working environment lends itself well for people to interact amongst, you know, the people that are there, so that if there are ideas that pop up or maybe challenges that pop up, there's people that you could potentially bounce that off of? I mean, because oftentimes, you know, if you're working remotely, you're pretty much by yourself. But in a co-working space, you do have an opportunity to maybe bounce some things around.
Well, in my head, and like on our website when we talk about it, that's part of the value proposition, right? But you'd be surprised. Like I was saying, that there's such different types of co-working spaces, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And even here on the island, I would say that for the situation that you described, that communal getting together and sharing with the same regular group of people day and week after week, that's our sweet spot, right? We're like this house or lounge that you subscribe to and can show up. But there's other co-working spaces that, you know, have much more beautifully built out conference facilities, mm-hmm. that have much more focused, you know, separate carrels for doing work by yourself, and where like interaction between people might not be the goal, right? Maybe it's, you know, to have a completely different environment where focus is the easy thing, right? Or, you know, a place that's bigger and maybe has a couple other businesses, you know, as part of the space, or mm-hmm. a makerspace or something like that, and they're trying to find their way, right? So there's just all these different types of environment. It really depends on what you're looking for. If you happen to be in the market for a place to work besides your home, if you have that option. And what I say is I just really encourage people to go and spend, you know, a couple days at the place and see what the vibe is like.
Well, and I kind of get the feeling that maybe there's a little bit of interaction with your current, you know, sort of clients that influence the way that the co-working space, Kuleana.work, actually evolves. So I think there's a synergistic relationship, you know, with the patrons that you have and what Kuleana.work is all about. Now, there's also something that you just recently launched called the Kuleana AI Lab. So I do want to get you to talk a little bit about that, because that's a very interesting kind of community offering that you've created. So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back at a short break to continue our conversation with Pete Simon, founder of Kuleana.work and the Kuleana AI Lab. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Honolulu Waldorf School.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR One. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Pete Simon, founder of Kuleana.work and the Kuleana AI Lab. And Pete, you know, I know you've told me about the AI Lab, and it was a kind of a course or workshop offering that you wanted to provide the community. Tell me a little bit about what's the genesis of the, you know, of this AI Lab, and who did you want to have benefit from this particular offering?
Sure. No, I love telling this story. So we had the co-working spaces we talked about over the last few minutes, and that was kind of a platform. And from the very beginning, we've had conversations that have to do with digital literacy, right? Mm-hmm. We would have, you know, once every other week, we'd set aside time where people from the community could come in and we'd talk about how to make a better password or how Wi-Fi works, things like that. And then, you know, as time went on, we had more of the classes, and then during lockdown, we scaled back. But then we started having them again, except this time at that second location at Kukui Grove Center, the topic that came up again and again was artificial intelligence, right? It had just become very popular. And I started working with it in my day job. And as it turned out, there were four of us in the co-working space. And our co-working space, like I said, is more boutique than large-scale operation, right? So it was amazing that we had four people in there whose work was directly with AI. Mm-hmm. But we started talking about that, and we had really lively conversations that, you know, not only involved the people at the space, but also had some community members who were showing some really interest in coming in. And so then one of our board members of the space also did grant writing and was active in the nonprofit scene on Kauai, much more than I was, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was just as much as necessary to run a co-working space, but she was really, really plugged in. And we started talking, the four of us, and we decided that we had an idea that had some currency, right? There was no other resource on the island that was talking about or developing any sort of awareness or resources for this new emerging technology. And just like way back in the day when I first discovered, you know, the online world, a very short exposure to generative AI, I knew that it was going to change the world. And like any tool, right, there are all these options for like how it could be really good and improve the quality of life, and how, you know, not so much, right, how it could be used for the detriment. And so it seemed like worthy work to not only understand it, but to help people understand it. If there was a need or, you know, a desire for that to grow on Kauai, then it'd be great, because I would love to help people understand that technology a little bit better. And it turns out that the people on the board felt the same way. And we got together, put in a grant application for the Innovation and Technology Grant that came around last year on Kauai, and we got awarded to develop an AI lab. And so we started that.
Wow, that's great. Now, is there any particular AI platform that you get people to sort of test their thoughts out on? Obviously, everybody, you know, pretty much knows about ChatGPT, but, you know, you have a whole variety of things to choose from now. Where do you point people to if they're exploring which platform to use?
So certainly we encourage people to understand how to use more than one solution or more than one model, is the technical term. ChatGPT is a an easy favorite to recommend because there's so much market penetration, right? There's so much help and understanding out there about ChatGPT. So if you have questions, it's easier to find answers about that one. But there are certainly our other, you know, state-of-the-art models like Gemini and Claude that we work with, and we help introduce other people. And it's kind of like when we say lab, what I mean, you know, we're not wearing lab coats. We're not heating up chemicals or anything like that, right? We're doing research, education, and development. So first we do research. So we've got a couple people who have background in social research. They're actually talking to people who live on Kauai, teachers and business owners to start with, and really understanding how they use the technology or how they don't, what their pain points are, what their hopes are for it, and really getting into it, right? Because sitting around thinking about it or thinking about how I use it is one thing, but until you talk with people and talk with the people of Kauai, you know, you don't know. And so we take that information and we publish it. We put that out on our website. And then we take that information and we start teaching workshops. So we start to educate not only by putting the stuff that we've learned out there for people to read and consume, but also, you know, giving something back where we're teaching, you know, these different groups, either the community at large or business owners or teachers or parents, how to use this technology and things to look for. And then finally, we're doing some development. We're working on developing what's called a local model, like an AI in a box in the computer that like sits at your location instead of somewhere distant on the web, because there's a lot of upside to learning how to do that and teaching the people of Kauai how that can be done.
So when talking to people that attend your workshops, do you find a common, let's say use model, that a use case that people are trying to use the right tool for? Now, you know, let's say they're writing a proposal. I mean, what is a typical common request for using an AI platform?
So, Bert, we have so many people coming to us who are at those initial stages, even tech-savvy people, people who've been around technology for decades. A lot of the people who come to us, at least, have a very introductory understanding of ChatGPT or any of these other models. And what that means is they use it for, you know, writing or rewriting emails or generating some kind of text content, or they use it as sort of an advanced search engine. And that's where, you know, that's where their skill level is. And then when they come to us, we say, oh, there's so much more that you can do, and that's available, you know, for free, or if you spent a little bit more time and energy learning and really helping people, you know, sort of level up as far as their understanding and their capability with this technology.
Yeah, no, Pete, that's great stuff. And, you know, if you want people to go check out where Kuleana.org is, and, of course, some of these use cases, where can they go?
So you can find us on the web at Kuleana.org.
Very good.
That's just like .com, except at the end it's .org.
Very good. I'll put that up on our show notes. Pete Simon is the founder of Kuleana.org and, of course, the Kuleana AI Lab over in Lihue, Kauai. Hey, Pete, I want to thank you for joining me today.
It's been great, Bert. Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about data gathering with Makali'i Metrics. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HBR One every Friday or anytime via the HBR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.